Okay.
This is Walter Simonson for 11 O'Clock Comics. Tune in.
This is Louise Simonson for 11 O'Clock Comics. It's awesome.
Same as it ever was.
Love it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's like I just told you guys.
It's getting hot. That's hot.
That is hot.
Is it though? Celebration of paper. That's what this show is.
True.
Right. No, it is. At least it? That's what it was originally designed to be.
Yes.
Now it's become something else with this internet and this digital stuff. Yeah, I can't take it. Every day, I look in my rearview mirror and I'm like, damn, I'm getting old. I'm seeing a lot of stuff. A lot of progress. A lot of things changing.
Sure.
Yeah.
That is true.
If you told me when I was a kid that there would someday be a controversy about letting computers draw pictures for your YouTube videos, I'd be like, what in the hell are you talking about? This is madness. And
can I tell you, I mean, people are treating like anyone even expressing the mildest interest in AI art like people treat like Trump. Like, I've never seen so many people on the Facebooks be like, if anyone posts anything about AI art, I am deleting I'm unfriending you immediately. I'm like, wow. I'm like, yo, it's not that serious. Like, it's not like. It's not pedophilia. Like, let's relax.
Well, you have a friend that is in that group. A very close friend. Yeah.
That's crazy.
I will unfollow anybody that promotes AI on their socials. If there's a post on Reddit that somebody's pumping the AI, I will block that person. There's a trend now in role-playing game books where they pad the art. They have some physical artists doing art, but then they also have a lot of AI art. If there's AI art in a book, I'm not buying it. I won't. Sorry, but that's the line I'm drawing. Does that make you sad?
No, man. You do you. Live your life.
Okay.
It's the magnitude. I can't understand. I can't fathom someone saying they're going to stop being friends with someone because they post a piece of AI art like that. Well, like, again, that's analogous to, like, someone saying they, like, are going to vote for Trump or something. Like,
well, no, analogous.
Those are not analogous.
But. Right, but unknown quantities on the internet. People who are just screen names. I will block those people. Now, right, but you're saying that, you know, you have no problem with AI. I'm not going to unfriend you in real life.
Right.
It just proves to me that you're flawed. That's okay. And it's okay that you are here because this is 11 O'Clock Comics, episode 909, spoken by a real-life human being into your ear holes named Vince B.
How do we really know that?
Oh, please. No computer would sink to my levels.
You are not AI. You are definitely
hell no.
You are Vince B. I am David A. Price.
You may or may not be David A. Price because this all could be one big AI script. But in the hopes that I'm not actually an AI bot, I'm named Jesse Plemons.
Hi, Jesse Plemons. You're not.
I'm double.
You're not Jesse Plemons. You're Jason Wood, everybody. Here together again to talk the glory of comics, brought to you by CheapGraphicNovels.com. CheapGraphicNovels.com have your omnibus editions, your trade paperbacks, manga, and OGNs, along with a whole mess of other stuff for less than you're going to get them elsewhere. Buy something, because they're super cheap. You will receive an email confirmation. You're going to turn around, loop-de-doop, reply to that email confirmation saying, 11 O'Clock Comics sent me, and Max is going to, sparkle fingers, grant you free shipping on your next order. It's crazy. You get your cake, and you get to eat it. CheapGraphicNovels.com. Yeah. I'm drinking water again. Move on.
I got seltzer again.
So. Seltzer.
I am finishing off that bottle of the show that I mentioned last time.
The show.
The show for the show.
Speaking, Jason, we are all living in a simulation. Have you ever seen the glitch videos? The tear in the matrix videos that are on YouTube?
No.
They're intriguing. Some of them I have a hard time explaining. A lot of fun. Like a bird hanging mm-hmm. in midair, like not flapping its wings, just a bird, just frozen in the air. Yeah. People just walk around like, what the fuck is that? And then all of a sudden the bird will just fly away. Like, it's crazy. How does this happen? I don't know. But it intrigues me. This is a very constant pastime with me, watching the glitch videos.
Well, it's all about, it's all built off the brain in the vat stuff, so.
Yeah. It's fun. It's intriguing to, if we are in a simulation, I should be like Galactus. I would love to be that big. Walking around just stomping on people, eating planets. That's what I want to be. Want to be Galactus.
It's true, because even your micropene would be huge.
It would be massive. I'd be able to fuck the moon if I was, right? Yeah, there you go. That's not nice. Let's talk about comics. Why you got to be mean?
I don't know.
You don't know. It's true.
There
is something we all read. A book that came out last week. Written by Matt Kent. What? Yeah, tell me about it, Jason. Written by Matt Kent, illustrated by Dan McDade, color art by Bill Cramtree, letters by Jim Campbell. If you find this, I'm already dead, number two. What'd you think, Jason?
Pretty wild, man. Pretty out there, you know? Reminded me a lot of, like, Adventure Time, honestly.
Oh, nice. Okay. You know?
Interesting.
Yeah, I can dig it.
Yeah, I mean, it went places I didn't expect it to go, for sure.
Exactly that, yeah, yeah. Based on the first issue, I would not expect it to be, I would not expect the second issue to be what it was. And that ain't a bad thing.
I mean, it's a three-issue series, so I thought we knew where it was going to go, which was basically just going to have to try and stay alive in this, you know, war planet. It got a lot deeper than that, a lot more metaphysical, a lot more... had some social commentary about, you know, it was interesting. I mean, I was really taken aback in a good way. I was like, okay. And now I shouldn't have been surprised because Matt Kent's the man, but I think visually this was McDade got to stretch a lot of different muscles in this issue.
Yeah. So. I think the thing I appreciated about this issue as a longtime science fiction reader was that the world is getting very well fleshed out. Like, it's not just, let's just throw this embedded reporter into a strange planet. And, you know, it's the visuals are alien and strange and uncomfortable. That in a lot, I've seen a lot of series where that's enough, but not mm-hmm. not this one. Matt is taking you, he's pulling back the skin of the planet and showing you what makes the various people tick, the religious beliefs of a subset of these people. The very planet itself is described in detail. Like, I appreciate that very much. If you take the time to follow that creative chain of thought all the way down to that last link and keep asking yourself, why? What does this mean? How do these people act? Why are they acting this way? What do they believe? Why do they believe it? Like, I love when you just keep adding layers and layers and layers to a fictional construct, which makes it even more believable to me. Like, there are reasons why these characters, these alien races are doing the things that they're doing. They're not just mean. They're not just evil. There's a reason, and I love that. Like, that's complete creative thought, where you're fleshing everything out. And to, like, I'm a fan of Matt Kent very much in his writing, and I think this is by far. It seems like he is pulling his pants up to his knees, and he's wading into the deep water. Like, he doesn't care. He's just gonna extrapolate on every concept in this book, and I love it.
Yeah, I unfortunately we only have one more to go, right? So
I don't think there's only one. I mean, I think there's only one more because it says so, but I don't think this is the last we're going to see of these characters. You're not going to take this kind of time and effort to set up something and then just be like, okay, third issue, we're done. I think we will
We might see this world, but
that's what I'm saying. There'll be another miniseries after this. Like, I'm sure he's going to come back to this. It's you're leaving too much money on the table. These ideas are gold.
Well, we don't know how well it's selling, to be fair.
Well, that there's that.
Yeah.
I don't consider that because I'm all about the.
Well, I'm saying he, but
I'm sure he does. Yeah.
Yeah.
And Dark Horse.
No, it's great show. I mean, McDade is a beast. I wish he was. Well, it's his business to draw when and how he wants, but I wish we saw more of him.
When we talked about the first issue. He's definitely sucking at the teat of Kirby in this thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
100%. Yeah. As most successful comic book artists do, right? I mean,
fair.
Yeah. Man was a wizard.
Mm hmm.
I thought it was gold.
There you go.
Yeah. I mean, in her, and with, I love that we're following the adventure of Reporter, because obviously she can put the experiences into words, and the fact that she's learning the language and trying to communicate, and I mean, whether it's what she's talking about, you know, the water that's turning her piss to rust color, but it's we have the smells she can't describe, the colors are like no color she's ever seen before, but it all comes down to, no matter whether you're on Earth or in some far godforsaken planet, the rules are pretty much the same, and you have the people who try to hold power over others. You have the scientists. You have the religious folks. There's just and the last couple pages, especially the last page. I mean, I was just like, holy shit! So yeah, it's been amazing. It's been a hell of a ride. She's a fantastic character. Not that she's, you know, she's helping us get through this journey, but it's otherwise this could just be random images of another planet with a bunch of aliens and us trying to figure it out. But she's here doing the heavy lifting for us, and I'm thankful for it. But I mean, between the tech and the way these creatures look, and I just, this is one of those books that just, I'm happy to be a comic book fan. I this is when I love the medium. I think this is a fantastic example of just really good comic booking. I'm a big fan of the book.
But just think about it. What Robin did. This is some Tarzan level shit. Where if you were like Lord Greystoke, taught himself to read by finding a book in an abandoned, dilapidated cabin, which was his parents, but he found a book of letters and taught himself the language from scratch, not knowing how to read, just looking at the pictograms of the letters. Imagine yourself on another planet and you don't speak the language, but this woman taught herself to speak an alien language. So you're starting at ground zero with nothing more than a book of strange looking symbols. How do you decipher that? And how do you make connections in your brain that this letter or this symbol means this? Like, it's insane to me that she would be able to pick up a book and teach herself the language based on with grounding in nothing. That's, like I said, that's what Tarzan did. It's crazy. She has to be incredibly smart to do that. Or lucky. Right? Because I also like when she's speaking, she's getting some of the words wrong. Or she may not be delivering the words as she intended them to be delivered.
Tourist. It's like tourist speak, you know. Like,
right, from nothing. It's mind boggling. You couldn't do it.
No, she is a cunning linguist.
Oh boy. Yeah. Very, very, very good book. It's up there. Yeah, it's very good. I just hope I don't know what the track record is for the collected editions for this imprint. Do they do hardcovers? I don't know. I hope they do.
Well, I'm trying to think. I mean, Like, I'm trying to think what else has come out of the imprint so far. Because it's Kent's own imprint. I mean, I know from all his years, I mean, he cares a lot about the production value of his stuff. So
sure.
Because
subgenre hasn't finished yet, or if it did,
yeah,
it hasn't been collected yet. So I don't know. But that's another good book. Subgenre. I read first two issues. It's very good.
Nice.
Yeah. This Matt Kent revival. What?
Yeah, I know, right?
Crazy.
He's back and better than ever. There's another book that we all read. This is like Triple Team-O-Rama. This is from Silver Sprocket. Silver Sprocket rules, okay? This is called When I Arrived at the Castle by Emily Carroll. It's a magazine-sized OGN that was previously published by Annie Koyama, yes. But once again, Silver Sprocket cracks open their repository of foil stamping.
Jesus, yeah.
Yes, but this one has French flaps.
Dun, dun, dun.
I love French flaps. They add so much class to a book.
It's true.
But I gotta say, I'm a little confused.
Oh.
Yes. The premise seems pretty straightforward. A young lady, an anthropomorphic cat, enters the castle of a villainous countess in hopes of killing her. And she's welcomed with open arms, given a bath, and allowed to see the, quote, inner workings of this countess. Her creature.
With a clever play on words.
Yeah, her creature form. And in the end, she appears to kill her. To devour her. And I have to ask, Jason, you've read this before. When it originally came out in 2019, I believe. What's your take on this book? Like, could it be that simple, or am I missing something?
Well, no. I think it's worth mentioning that inside this book there are several text pieces.
Yes.
She moves to prose. And I think that's where the answer lies. I think in that those prose pieces, it basically talks about the way that the cat and the person swap identities to suit their needs. I think that's kind of what the narrative is. I think ultimately what the story to me was about was that Carol, they were just upending some classic horror tropes, not the least of which is the Bram Stoker's person arriving at the castle, right? But in this case, Emily plays with gender identity because both of the main characters present as females. The Countess is still clearly a powerful force of evil, but it's unclear that who we would consider the protagonist is all that good either. I mean, they did come there to kill the Countess and are bestial and demonic in their own way. So I took the end to mean that the yin and the yang. It's not really clear cut about whether we should be happy that the Countess was defeated or not, like that, you know. So it's more that, like, sometimes these stories don't have black hat, white hat, you know. Kind of how I took it, but
in the text pieces, there's a commonality between all of them, where some of the common things are blood, and the spilling of blood will reveal the path to the castle. Characters are given choices. Within the larger narrative, the cat girl is given choices to open doors. And when she opens doors, that's when the stories pop in. So it's like she's being given a window into these events that happened either before or after. You're not quite sure, but they all involve the spilling of blood, which will reveal the location of the castle. And the book itself is presented in black, white, and red, but it's not as kitschy as the Marvel black, white, and red series. This red is used to very, very good effect. And it's a Japanese thing. Black, white, and red always makes me think of the best of the Japanese uses of the form. But if you want answers, definitive answers, this book is not going to give them to you. Because there's a sexual attraction between the two. Even though the cat girl came to kill the contest, they got their fingers in each other's mouths. Their bodies are very close in a lot of scenes. And it's just, if you set out to kill someone and you eventually find yourself within the lair of this person you came to kill, I don't think the first thing on your mind is to take a bath. At least I wouldn't. I'd be like, all right, here you go. I'm going to take it. It's strange. Like, she's welcomed into the house, into the castle, and rainy and all. So, you know, she wants to take a bath. She does so, and she's being observed by the countess in doing her little personal thing. And then the story just gets a little strange. It's like, come on with me. I'm going to show you this hallway. And that's when there's a lot of probing in this book.
Well, right. So Carol's all of their works have been horror tinged. They've all dealt with soft erotica, and they all have the black, white, and red motif.
Yeah, she does a great job with that.
Yeah, absolutely, it's become a signature for them. I don't know. I thought this. I think this story's fairly surface level, but by design, it's an erotic story about a classic horror trope. That's all I took it to be. I don't think there was a big message that you missed or you're supposed to get. I think it's just is what it is. It reminded me a lot of the Mignola one shots we get, the side pocket horror one shots we get occasionally. It's just a story. It happens and it's over. There's not.
I don't know about that. I think there's more to it. I just don't know what that more is. Because while it seems fairly straightforward, the ending's very odd. Like, okay, I'm going to come to your castle. I'm going to kill you. You're going to try and, you know, make winky eyes at me and confuse me with this array of doors and parables that somehow parallel my own story. And then I'm just going to rip your face off. Like, okay. Yeah. Maybe I'm looking for something that's not there. I don't know.
I thought it was
wonderful, though, because I like it when I can walk away from a book and I'm still thinking about it. Mm-hmm. And questioning events within it. And I'll be honest, I read it twice. Because I don't like to leave things to chance. Like, if I don't understand something, I'm going to try and go back and maybe hopefully uncover things I may have missed the first time around. And I thought this book was worth multiple trips.
Yeah.
Graphically, visually, I think it's wonderful. I love the keyhole pages.
Yeah,
I think they are absolutely astounding. Especially the eruption page. I'm not going to get, I won't describe it because buy the stamp book and see what's up. But it's just really visually, it's very, very well done. It's captivating, actually. Very strong layouts, very strong design. The compositions of most of the images are just spot on. Like this is a seasoned professional. So I like that.
I have to compliment her because she, on the back flap, it says, she lives with her wife, Kate, and a couple of dogs.
I think that's outdated. Oh yeah.
Okay.
But anyway, whatever. Yeah, it doesn't matter.
Why would you compliment her for what?
No, he's reading the back. It's my understanding that they're non-binary, but
right, and that's and so I'll roll with that. There's after the as we near the end, and she finds herself on the shore of a milk white lake, and then the water was sluggish, left a film on my skin. They found a way to actually make me it triggered a memory because I know what that feels like, and I totally wasn't expecting for this story, for this book, to kind of give me that feeling. I just think I'm going to read a book and it's going to be straightforward, and I mean, as great as it looks and it evokes whatever feelings that evokes, but I mean these pages, when you're like, because all I think about is like when you're taking a warm bath, or you're at a hot spa or a warm spring or something like that, where and you just you feel you no longer feel yourself, because like you're one with the water, and you're all the temperatures are in sync. So it's just it's similar, and you get out of the water. It just the way it was worded, the way it was presented, and the story that was being told, it wasn't just now me reading a straightforward a sequential book. It added another layer to it, which I could, like I said, wasn't expecting. So the fact that it went above and beyond the nifty spot varnish, the well drawn illustrations, and the funky wordplay, it hit a few other senses I wasn't expecting it to hit, and I truly appreciate that. So I did big thumbs up to Emily for that.
Well, I implore my booze, now that you all have delved into this, to give A Guest in the House a try.
Which was, yeah, you talked about that.
That was my favorite horror comic of 2023. If you go back and listen to our O'Closkers. By the way, I did look up when I first discussed this book. It was on episode 645. For those who want to go back to the Wayback Machine, it was the last episode of the 2019 year, and y'all, we had a banger series of topics that evening. You ready? It was a Book of the Month episode, so we did that plus other things. Book of the Month Alone by Christopher Chabutet.
Wow. Okay.
Yes. We talked also about Hellboy, Star Wars, The Kill Lock number one. Remember that? Batman Universe and Nick Darrington. When I Arrived at the Castle, V-Wars, The Witcher, The Night by Druyer, Image-O-Rama, Headlopper, Family Tree, and Assassination. Wow. Dude, was it like an 8-hour episode?
I was just going to say.
Holy Jesus. Christ. Like, what?
Yeah.
I don't talk about that many things. That's crazy.
It was that was probably at least 2.5-hour episode.
Oh, my goodness. That is crazy. Yeah.
It's good stuff, though.
Right?
Yeah, now you're getting 3 episodes a week. So it's the same thing. Kind of. This week they are.
Yeah. Because you got your Patreon bonus episode.
Yes, for those of you who don't know, we just released our Patreon special episode, number 2, focusing on Garth Ennis and Steve Dillon's Preacher. And the only way you can hear that, it was like 2 hours, 2+ hours. The only way you can hear that is becoming a patron. See how we do that? We give the patrons a special 2+ hour episode every month just for being patrons.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It was a lot of fun.
We had a good time. That discussion was good. Yeah.
Yep, yep, yep.
Good stuff. So there we go. Did we read anything else in common?
I want to seed anytime you're trying to allot to me to hear you two talk about. You guys read a lot of a single comic this past.
Okay, so yeah, we did. This is this is when the reading list is definitely a positive, because had Vince said he read 7 volumes of a book, if you had posted that on like a Tuesday. And granted, this is a different kind of week because of when we're recording. But if you had done that on a Tuesday, I'd have been like, well, shit, there's no way I'm going to be able to do that before showtime. Maybe the first trade, but I wouldn't be able to catch up. But the fact that, you know, posted over the weekend, I was like, well, fuck it. Then I should be able. This is when, and it's a topic that'll probably go on for a while, so we don't have to discuss it tonight. But it made me think, because it also slightly connects to what Jason mentioned when we were talking about Preacher, because Jason, you said you read it after CGS was talking about it, so it was well after the series had started, and pretty much after it wrapped, or right around when it was getting ready to wrap up. And this is obviously a book, we'll say the title in a second, but this is obviously a book that's been out for a couple of years now. And I know there are definitely times where I'll see the crowd talking something up, and there may be different factors involved, whether it's the subject matter, the characters, the creators, and I'm either going to go along with everybody and jump on that bandwagon, or I'm just going to be like, you know what, I'm just going to keep in the back of my mind, and if I get around to it, cool, but there are other things that I know I'm going to enjoy, so I'll focus on that, and then when I have time, I'll get around to the other stuff. But obviously, this is something that Jason and a bunch of other folks have been grooving to since it started. Vince decided to check it out, which I'm over here and I'm like, well, then fuck, I don't want to be the only dude who's not going to be aware of it. At least just be aware of it. Even if I didn't dig it, I at least would have been like, okay, well, then at least we all read it. We are all familiar with it to a degree. But yeah, so Vince decided, based on Batman, Dylan Dog, to read Something is Killing the Children, which prompted then me to dive in and consume everything, all 35 issues that have been out to date.
Well, y'all are reading machines.
Well, it wasn't hard to do. It
really wasn't.
It reads very smoothly, and yes, there's a good amount of dialogue, but it's natural. It's conversational. I don't know. I lost all sense of time reading it. I was like, wait a minute, I'm on volume 3 already? So yeah. I just kept going. And I thought it was wonderful. I don't get the FOMO like Dap. Like, I don't care what you read.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, but something about the fact that Deladera drew this, and I just absolutely adored what he did on the Batman Dylan Dog. I'm like, well, I need more of this guy's work. Where can I find it? And, of course, Something is Killing the Children. So I've read some Tynan before. We all have. But I have to admit, I'm stupid. I feel really awkward saying, hey, this Tynan guy's really good. Like, no shit. And he proved it to me on this series, because I think it's masterfully done, not only from an aesthetic point, but as a vehicle for other things. Like, I think it was really, really smart, the whole mask angle, where different masks are worn by different functions within the houses. I think as a merchandising thing, and we've seen it, they sell those, mm-hmm. those, like, that's really smart to build something into your book that can make you more money and make the fans feel more connected to your fictional thing.
That's the same thing with the Department of Truth. He sells the little pin.
Right.
But the mask is a great, yeah. idea, and it's a great idea.
Yeah. No, it's a very good idea. And I'm reading and I'm thinking, okay, Dap would definitely be a blue mask. I'd be a black mask because I'm awesome. And Jason, Jason, hype beast that he is, would definitely be a white. He needs a posse. So Jason, he needs a posse. But I think the conceit is very simple. There are monsters that exist that prey upon children. And there's an organization or a number of organizations that are solely tasked with killing these monsters. That's all you need to know. But I mean, the wrinkles, the finer points of the House of Slaughter start to come up very slowly, and we get attached to characters, and then they go away. And I was like, "Oh shit, no, not Paul, no, please, no," because I thought it was just wonderful, absolutely wonderful. And I love Erica because I'm a sucker for a platinum blonde, especially one that can cut your friggin' head off in a second.
I absolutely love the fact that even though you get five issues to a trade, he didn't write it so that a trade holds a complete story. The first arc is the first 15 issues. It's those first three trades.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then you get a bit of an origin. You get some backstory. We're introduced to who brought her in to the slaughterhouse. And then we have a whole thing going on in Mexico. And it's just, I thought, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I'll go back to it. Go ahead.
No, I just, when you said slaughterhouse, that's exactly what I thought. I said, that is so smart. Yeah. Calling it House of Slaughter, slaughterhouse. Mm-hmm. When your main function is to just rip and destroy like that. And the other thing that really amazed me was the fact that, as is the case with many paranormal things, where children seem to be, if you believe in this stuff, children seem to be far more attuned to the paranormal than adults. It seems like when you mature, you lose that connection to the otherworldly.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. that's a big part of this book, that kids can see these monsters.
Right.
Adults can't, but Erica can because she got that little gizmo in her temple that allows her to see them. And it's just, it's fascinating that there's so many different, so many possibilities to these characters, and so much so that there's a freaking spinoff already.
Yeah.
The House of Slaughter series. Yeah.
24 issues.
That's crazy. I mean, you could tell that a concept is rife with possibilities when there exists other permutations and they don't feel forced.
That's right.
It just feels like a natural opening of the mythology even wider. It's crazy how good this book is.
We've got the House of Slaughter here in Chicago in the U.S. We've got the House of Cutter, and I'm sure, and obviously that there are many more. But again, not to going back to Department of Truth, but it's very similar. James seems to enjoy telling those stories where the German, basically, it's the same thing with the Department of Truth, where these are all of these, like whether it's the flat earth or the ice wall or the big, these are all things that you believe enough, like school shootings and the conspiracy theorists, where it's like they just you believe it into existence, and it's the same thing with the monsters that Erica is hunting, because of course it's the kids that are all in, it's the children who are bringing it together. But I didn't look into any sort of backstory or look for any interviews, but I am curious to know if the James in the first story, if this is based on an old story or an old idea that Dinan had when he was younger, or if it's just something there, if he just decided, hey, this little boy and I have something in common, so I'm just gonna I'm real curious to know why his name was James, wears glasses, is gay, and I'm just curious if he's kind of just telling us a story that he came up with when he was way younger and a child himself. But I'm a real big fan of the way Erica's story, how we were introduced to her and how it was unfolding after that, because At first, yeah, she's on the phone with somebody we don't know at first, and I don't think she's solo doing this, but you know, there's no indication that there's really a large organization involved. And then as we near the end of the first arc, we see ideas. But then, of course, we get how she got brought into the family, and it's seeing how, instead of us getting just a straightforward origin and us growing up with her or seeing her grow up and becoming the monster hunter that she is, we get the flashbacks, and I love that, because James will be able to sprinkle things in as the series continues, and we'll get maybe a throwaway line or introduce a character, and then maybe in the next arc, if it's another flashback, we'll see why somebody might have some animosity towards someone else or what. I love how it's not just a linear, chronological, straightforward type story. He's going to bounce around, and I appreciate that. I'm a big fan of that technique, and it's nice to know that, you know, if Erica gets on a bus and who knows where she's going to end up next, it doesn't mean that the next issue is her getting off the bus. It could be, hey, here's another flashback with, you know, Erica still pissing Aaron off or fucking around with some white masks and pissing them off or stealing the gummy worms from the dragon. I knowing that I don't know where it's going has me jamming at the bit for where we're going from here.
Respect.
I think the totems are a good idea too. Really good idea.
Yes, yes.
Because
yes.
They can be sold. See, I'm looking at it as for from a standpoint where
total marketing.
You know, if I was creating something to be consumed, I would want to give fans of said thing as many avenues to give me money as possible. And the idea of the, well, conceptually within the book, the totems are really smart. That, I mean, I would buy an Octo in a second. Like, the thing is just cute and it's cool. Yeah. And it's a motherfucker, right? It's this evil. What was the Brit's name? The
Cutter.
Yeah. And her dolly. Like, that was crazy.
Yeah.
How she just, that's a heartbreaking arc. That ends in a really, I don't want to say because if people haven't read it, but I mean, the Tynan doesn't pull any punches either. People will die. There's a lot of kids that bite it in the first arc, and it just keeps spiraling off from there. Like, can you imagine as a parent, being brought into a gym littered with dead bodies with tarps on them, having to identify the remains, probably not pretty, of your, like, that's so bleak. And you feel for the principal and the sheriff, because they're put in a situation where they don't know what the frig's going on. They can't see anything. That's a really neat concept too.
That's the thing. Yeah, I think that's it seems simple, but it's such a brilliant conceit, because you just think about how that it almost fits into the way we all experienced fear of monsters when we were young, right? Like bad dream, or you see something in the shadows, your parents come and you check on you, they look under your bed, they look in the closet, they don't see anything, but like, what if it was there, they just couldn't see it, right?
Right.
And that's, it's a really, really...
And that plays out in the narrative too, because that feeds into the old parents disregarding things their children are telling them, because, yeah, they're just kids, they're just imagining things. But if you notice, none of the adults in this book talk down to children. Erica doesn't belittle James or pass off his feelings as just, he's just a kid. She never does that. That wasn't done to her when she was coming up. It just seems like adults, for the most part, conduct themselves with children as if they were speaking to an equal. Or at least someone that can completely understand what they're saying. And I thought that was great, because that scene in the bus where James is just, he's just crying. It's like, he cries a lot, and just, you know, he lets little bits of himself out in his dialogue, and she just picks up on it and treats him with respect. That's the thing. The kids in this book, the ones that survive anyway, are treated by the members of the House of Slaughter with respect. And I thought that was great because that, again, it plays into the old how adults tend to disregard children, or at least the quote silly things they come out with as, you know, flights of fancy or imagination. But what if it's not? What if it's real? You in this universe, you could very well lose your child. That's a big deal.
Absolutely.
Wonderful book. Absolutely. And I want to punch myself in the Calhouns many times for waiting so long to read this.
Well, what's really neat about it, too, if you remember, is it was going to be a 5-issue miniseries.
Yeah, so much for that. Jesus.
But I'm saying, like, it's so neat because it's so often 99% of the time it's the other way around, right? I mean,
yeah.
Series gets launched, the writer has dreams of doing 50 issues, but knows they have to couch it as a single arc in case it doesn't sell, and then we never see any more of it, and the idea just kind of withers unless they can come back to it. But in this case, he launched it as a 5-issue miniseries, and after I think issue 2 or 3, the sales were just so massive that they announced they were going to keep it going. So
that's
and then the rest is history. I mean, this is really the book. I mean that was Tynan became a thing on the back of this book, really. I mean, and then everything's just been explosive ever since.
I think this book has legs that could have the reach of a Walking Dead if played correctly. Like, if it branches out into other media.
Right.
Television show. I think this book is as strong a premise as what, like, it's certainly as thin of a premise as Walking Dead. It's the characters that sold that.
Yep.
Right. And I think this could do the same. And I love zombies, but I would love to see this take off into like a Netflix series or something.
Absolutely.
Yep.
It's also worth noting because we were all singing the Batman Dylan Dog praises, which led to this whole virtuous circle of events. We then, after we recorded, did confirm and find out that the Batman Dylan Dog was actually done before Something's Killing the Children.
And that's amazing to me because I think the art styles are, while they're in the same universe, they're light years away. I think Della Dera brought something to Dylan Dog Batman that you don't see a whole lot of within the pages of Children. The line style is very thin and very sparse, where in Batman Dylan Dog he's slapping that black down like crazy. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, the guy's very versatile. I'll give him that. Sure. Yeah, I really like his art a lot.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know if you guys were with me, but I did meet him at New York Comic Con, and I would say I would peg him probably in his late 40s, early 50s.
Yeah. Yeah, he looks like
looking
it.
At the based on the image in the back of the trade, I would say so.
Yeah.
Maybe he was in the aisle opposite of Garth Ennis when we walked by him.
For real.
Nice.
Seriously.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is, you've got another 40 issues to come along for the journey, so.
Nice. I have all of House of Slaughter.
I meant SIKTT. Tynan wants it to go 75 issues.
Yeah, well, I think it'll be extended. If it keeps selling the way it's selling, I think it will get more than that.
Yeah, it's right. Not that that matters to us, but it is a legit. It's a major commercial hit as well.
The restraint is amazing. Where, again, trying to put myself in the shoes of the creator, where if I had this property that I wanted to ensure lasted a long time. Well, that may not be a desire of his, but I mean, if I was doing it, I'd be like, I want to write this book forever and keep living off this art. One would think that the House of Slaughter series would somehow be folded in to Something is Killing the Children, like maybe a jumping back and forth to the past, to present, or different, sure, different characters. But no, it's a different series entirely. That's crazy. That's like, it's not a gamble taking into account the success of the parent book, but I mean, who's to say that series would have found an audience as well. Like, it's, it was a little risky, but you got to give them props. It looks like it's taken off.
Hell yeah.
And there's going to be, like, isn't there going to be a series of one-shots or another series in the works?
House of Butcher is coming soon. And Deladera is drawing it, yeah.
I hope they keep doing these forever, because I will keep reading them.
Excellent.
I think this series is great. You should have told us about this.
Yes, sir.
He always keeps shit to himself, man.
It's weird.
You know me, Mr. Hype Beast. I'm always throwing you guys the multiple Eisner winners. He's always poo-pooing them.
Take the white bandana off and calm down, okay? Oh, hey, everybody. We thank you for being here. Once again, we hope you will solicit our sponsor, because we like to see you save. And you're going to save if you go to cheapgraphicnovels.com. They have everything you want. Omnibus, trade paperbacks, OGNs, manga, all that stuff with a spine. They got it. And they're going to give it to you for far less than you're going to pay at Amazon and other outlets. Also, cheapgraphicnovels.com. Also, please go to our Patreon page, patreon.com/11oclockcomics. Check it out. We have this cat. We have downloads. Original fanzine downloads. We have pages a day. We have covers a day. EOC Loves, which is our spotlight feature where we pick an artist each month, and you get 30, however many days there are in the month, of a piece of work that this artist produced every day. Clunky way to say it, I know. Plus you get polls, you get the patron special episode, you get camaraderie. It's just amazing. patreon.com/11oclockcomics. In your travels, I bought this today, but I didn't read it yet. But this is another one of them. Hey, get this book and you'll be hearing about it very, very soon. Because as soon as we're done recording tonight, after I put the episode up, I'm going to read this book because I'm itching, man. It is from Oni Press. It is called Nacelleverse Number Zero.
That's right, yeah.
Jason, you know who's in this book?
Tell me.
Roboforce, Biker Mice from Mars, Sectars, Power Lords.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's right. They're trying to make a universe out of all those.
You forgot.
It's like C-list 80s properties.
Not C-list. And at the center of it all is the Great Garlou. Shut up. It's amazing. I'm looking through it, and the art is just, it's a bit cartoony, but, I mean, these are toy and animation properties, are they not? So the art should reflect their origins. Fun fact, I, to this day, have every toy in the Sectars line.
Wow.
Yes, all of them. And not so much the other ones. Like, I have some Power Lords. I never had a Garlou, but I always wanted one. And by the time I had the money to buy a Garlou, the prices just went stupid. So, I mean, he's very expensive. If you can find it mint, it's very expensive. Not extremely expensive, but it's expensive. And I'm not a convert to Roboforce. I must have blanked out on those characters. But yeah, this looks great. It's 40 some pages, heavy cardstock covers, but it's going to cost you $5.99. So what? I bought it. I want to read it. I'm loving it. If I like this, I'm going to jump on the Roboforce series, which comes out in, according to the back of the book, April. So there you go.
You're a maniac.
Yeah, I like fun stuff. I love toys.
I like fun stuff.
I do.
Who doesn't like fun stuff?
And okay, I didn't give you the creative team, and I'm going to do that right now. It was written by Melissa Flores, with art by Ramat Handoko, Roald Marcellius, Francis Portela, and Diogenes Neves.
Ah.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's a sharp-looking book. Check it out. See, I'm looking at the Sectars, and I can imagine my hand in that toy flying it around the backyard.
Yeah, you can.
Yep. Nacelleverse, get it.
Do it. I'm just going to say, because I need to, I think I need to reread the seventh issue, because it's been a minute. And it's the second arc for a World Tree by James Tynion IV. It's James O'Rama. Fernando Blanco on art, Jordi Belair on colors, and Dedita Bikandar from Dawn Runner is on letters. And the gang is getting some answers from Winter, from the dude who brought them all together again, and Silk, our FBI agent, is also chasing down the mystery on her end. There's a lot of panels on a lot of pages in the eighth issue, and a lot of amber and green in this issue. But it is it still looks great. I really, really dug that first arc. I thought it was. I thought it was a little tighter than these two issues so far. I'm not losing the thread. There's just a lot going on. So I want to go back to the start of this arc and get back to it with a little bit more frequency than just letting them sit after the issue comes out and then getting back to it. So I still think it's a hell of a ride. So in your travels, World Tree from Image Comics and James and Fernando and Jordi.
Nice. Vince, I hope my In Your Travels makes you smile.
What it is.
Okay. I got some ducks for your ass.
Oh, okay. The door's open. Specifically, what ducks?
I'm bringing it over to the wonderful world of Dynamite.
Oh no.
I caught up on 2 Dynamite comics, which has gotta be a record for me.
Yeah. Seriously. Who knew it took Darkwing Duck to get you to read Dynamite.
I read Darkwing Duck 5 through 10 and Nega Duck 1 through 3.
Nice.
And it's a fucking blast, dude. First of all, let me give the creative teams. Darkwing Duck is being written by Amanda Diebert with Carlo Lauro on the art chores. And Nega Duck is written by old-time friend of the show. We haven't uttered the man's name in a long time, Mr. Jeff Parker. And Ciro Cangelosi on art. So keeping in the good tradition of having Italians draw the Duck comics. They're intertwined books, as you could probably imagine. Listen, this is not Eddie Campbell here. This is very, very surface level stuff. But it's right up my alley because it's all about the teams, Vince. You got the Justice Ducks, right? You got Darkwing, you got Launchpad, you got Gizmo Duck, you got Morgana, Stegma, Neptunia, and who are they battling, Vince?
Negaduck.
Yes, and his team of the Fearsome Five. Negaduck, Megavolt, Quackerjack, Bushroot, and Liquidator.
Oh, nice.
I'm loving every bit of it. It's ridiculously silly. They're all up to no good. The you know, it's good versus evil. It's, you know, it's obviously G-rated. It's but it's a lot of fun. And I will say, I think I like Lauro's art a lot, but it's very much sort of like by the book, almost like the cartoon cell animation, like you might find from any well-equipped Disney animator that's at the studios when you know, go and get a drawing from them. But Cangelosi on Negaduck, now that art sung to me. I think it's very, very nice. I don't know what else Cangelosi has done. I imagine because I don't know the name. It's mostly been in Europe. For all I know, maybe. He's a regular Duck artist on the, you know, the other stuff that they do in Europe. But either way, liked the art in Darkwing, loved the art in Negaduck, and I thought both were just silly, silly fun. Just all ages fun. So really, really fun.
I totally agree with you that the art in Negaduck is a cut above Darkwing.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I love it when they take a template and make it their own. Like, you know, you got your model sheets, and this is the way the character should be portrayed, and this is the way they were in the animation. But then the Italians come in and like, scusa, and they just put their personal stamp on it. More brushy, more thick and thins on the line work, and yeah, I like it when they just take it somewhere else. But in deference to the original stuff, right? So yeah, I think they're good books. Who knew, right? Mm-hmm. From what I'm hearing, all of the Disney books at Dynamite are
they seem to be
far better quality than.
Yeah, you know. I have no idea if they're selling well, but they seem to be doing like they seem to have a little buzz. I agree. Like
yeah, well,
in the villains book in general. I believe Caleb likes the Gargoyles book.
There could be all.
No, but I haven't really read it, so I can't say one or the other. But I know he's a pretty big mark for the property, so he seems to be happy with what's coming out of that. And they've done. I think they're doing more than one in a month now, so it must be doing good enough to justify expanding it. You know.
Yeah, you're not going to hear Dynamite out of my mouth for a long time, if ever.
Oh.
Yeah, because they're raising the prices on all of their books to $4.99.
Oh.
Yeah, I don't think Dynamite books are worth $4.99. Case in point, there's an Elvira miniseries out right now called Elvira Meets H.P. Lovecraft. Now, you would think that I'd be on that like white on rice, but it's $4.99. I would much rather just wait for them to be collected in trade and get it for like 40% off. Right?
Get it.
It's Kiss of Death, I think.
Dundada dundodo.
Yep. All right, people. Hey, thank you for listening. You know the drill. Buy some comics, read some comics, talk about them online, love them, spread the love of sequential art. And in the meantime, come back here. We'll be waiting for you with more, hopefully scintillating, comic talk. In the meantime, say goodnight. Who loves you? Who loves you so much?
This okay. Was his baby.
Yes.
There you go. Name that tune.
He won't be able to name that tune.
Dude, I'm proud of myself for going to be made that. I am 100% sure I've been doing this before.
Yep. David.
Good night.
We're probably infringing on someone's copyright.
Yeah,
so
we're not like talking over it or anything. So yeah,
like having a call traced. I think you have 20 seconds.
10% of it or something.
You're allowed to use 20 seconds before it's copyrighted.
There you go. Man.
Good shit. Thank you.
Yeah. Did you see David?
No, this is not time yet. But now it is. David.
Oh, nice. All right, people. We love you so much. Get out of here. Tell them you love them.
Love them.
I love them. I guess I'm bidding them adieu for a while, right?
Yeah. I think. Yeah, you are.
Yeah, it's going to be a couple episodes before you hear Jason again.
Yeah, I'm going to be out in the Europes during. Yeah, so I'll miss you all desperately.
Yeah, but he only loves you so much.
No, because I'm going to not be here for a while. I love them the whole.
Oh, amount. See, it shouldn't be contingent on anything. You should just love them.
Life is complicated.
No, life is complicated if you're Jason Wood. It doesn't have to be complicated. You just love everybody.
Wow.
Right?
That's dream.
Only so much room and so many hearts.
Yeah.
It's, you all have these prerequisites.
You know who I don't love?
It's just weird. It's weird.
You know who I don't love? I don't love mutant zombies or Pantera. That's what I don't love.
Let it go. See, it's more interesting to me than it's been in a long, long time.
Well, okay.
Right? So maybe I'm the type of reader that was mildly interested in G.I. Joe, but now that they got fucking mutant zombie Serpentor, I'd be like, okay, this is fun.
Cool.
Okay, Jace, we're out of here.
I'm happy my man's getting a paycheck, so that's good.
Yes, indeed.
And he's eat.
That's it for that one.